Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 277.
This week on the podcast, Trump's first State of the Union address is the most watched, sixth most watched State of the Union ever.
And the Nunes memo contains one major smoking gun. The Devin Nunes is a real life idiot.
Plus Paul Ryan celebrates buying you a Costco membership and the Koch brothers an actual Costco.
And Trump's infrastructure plan is to ask other people to pay for infrastructure, but still to cut stuff.
Plus, in a confusing turn, now maybe Democrats don't want moderate pro-life assholes running for Congress? You tell me.
And, you know, sometimes you just need a dead goose falling from the heavens to teach you that hunting is really freaking stupid.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
Or on iTunes. It's a great place to look for us.
Stitcher.
Facebook. Yeah, Stitcher. Maybe if you're looking to actually listen to the podcast and not just hear our musings on things. I don't know how the internet works. You guys, 30% of Puerto Rico still doesn't also know how the internet works because 30% of Puerto Rico remains without power.
Inching ever closer.
Inching ever closer. But this week, some articles about how a little bit of a disaster capitalism has taken hold there, that they're starting to do things like privatize public utilities.
I'm surprised it took them that long to get around to that.
I bet it's been happening and it's taken us this long to notice.
To notice. Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
But let's not take away public utilities in and privatize them in the process of helping them repair their infrastructure.
Yeah.
We're going to have more on infrastructure coming up.
Sure.
Not Puerto Rico's, obviously.
No.
Mm-mm. The federal government has no interest in that. But
no,
we just finished watching the Super Bowl.
We did.
So for Loopy, it's because I've had to watch sports for like 3 hours today, and that was enough.
And because I've been drinking.
And because Brent's been drinking.
So there you go.
The two things that happen every Super Bowl Sunday at Brain Trust Live.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was this year.
It's a great game.
We didn't have to feel like we relived the Trump administration's victory because, as you recall, last year, the Patriots came back in the final moments and took the
Yeah, and we all felt like it was some sort of like narrative for like our station in life.
Yeah, because Tom Brady had been a vocal Trump supporter, so everyone was sort of like the Patriots are Trump supporters. And
Maybe not as vocal just because nobody cares about Nick Foles, but Nick Foles, also a man who's working on his online degree to be a pastor from Liberty University.
Yeah.
So there's no way that he voted for Hillary Clinton, by the way. So there's nothing really to feel great about here.
No. This year, because the team they were playing also didn't offer much in terms of political awareness, there was really no one to root for.
No, it was a lose-lose.
So we just rooted. I was rooting for whoever was.
We didn't root for that Dodge Ram commercial, though, did we?
No. No, we had some strong feelings about the commercials, which was the sport we were watching.
Buddy.
Yeah, misusing, or not, I mean, they just used a Martin Luther King quote. I think they believed they were using it correctly, but
showing
a,
that's what he
reading
liked,
a Martin Luther
capitalism.
King, right, quote.
And soldiers.
Over
and
images of, like, the apparatuses that are, like, harming people of color in America, and then Ram trucks, which is like the symbolism of the very people who have been doing nothing but causing trouble for people of color for...
Yeah, that's right.
Like, this is... It was like they were... It was a commercial to sell trucks to the people that wield batons at the people who Martin Luther King Jr. was speaking to.
Nailed it.
Yeah. So, not in great taste.
No, it wasn't.
But, in any case, somebody won.
Yeah.
You...
And
I was
it was a good game.
I was rooting
was
for everyone to lose.
I know. You were rooting for whoever was behind at the time.
Yeah, it's because Brent told me that none of the Eagles had kneeled at any point in the season.
Not once ever.
And I, or not once ever. And I was like, well, I'm against everyone now.
Sure.
I had no, I had no feelings towards anyone.
No, it was,
But I know it was a good game because Brent kept whooping. next
I was getting loud.
Yeah. Uh-huh. In any case, in the sport of politics, the State
that's
of the Union...
Yeah, that's
was
a,
this
that's
week,
the,
and
that's the Super Bowl.
The Super Bowl of political speeching.
Yeah, that's
This year,
Trump, the loser in this contest.
It was the third longest speech in history.
And that's not what you're looking for from him.
Wait
a minute. Sometimes it is.
Right.
But not at
not
the State
today.
Of Union address. In a way that, like, even despite him being who he is, like, has to have, like, some sort of formalness to it.
Yeah.
Like, you can't bring out the Trump steak props at a State of the Union. And that's why you...
He did his best, too. He brought more visitors than I have ever seen in my life. The speech was 95% shout-outs. And, like, people...
And him loudly clapping into the microphone for himself.
Yes, a lot of that. Yeah. And also him cueing the audience to clap for him.
Yes,
He was. There was a lot of that going on.
Yes.
This was... It was, like, so cynical, the number of people who were... People who had gone through something truly traumatic and were now being used as political props by an idiot, like a boy king idiot, who, like, didn't realize that he was against all the things that he was claiming he was for and supporting them. So like that story with that baby where he said that they had, you know, this father had found a drug addicted mother who gave them the baby, but they never tell you what happens to the mother. And I was like, what if there had been resources for this lady to keep her baby?
They're all
what if we could have gotten her off heroin and then she could have like also had a life and the baby could have had a wife, but whatever. What do I know? But so in any case, he said a lot of words.
And too many.
In between those
the
words,
third most words,
was a lot of dog whistles to the far right.
That's right.
It was like he would say things about unity and how, you know, coming together, and then he would talk about how terrible it is when
chain
people
migration.
You know, when people trample on the flag, or like a lot of references to the kneeling situation.
Which is that's just too much.
It's too tacky,
you know,
too.
Like that was a. I think people. I mean, I was in a room full of people at that point in the speech, and granted, yes, they were all Democrats, but not like the biggest room full of like, you know,
hardcore
sort of
politicos,
activists, and also like on the older side of things. Like, I think it was like it was before my rehearsal, so basically, I was in a room with a bunch of retired people who probably, to some degree, think that all of these people probably should be standing up for the national anthem, like just because like that's where their brains were.
Retired Christians.
Yeah, that's right. So. And as soon as he said that, everybody was just like, come on! So, like, I think that statement was, like, yes, it was obviously a dog whistle statement, but I think that, like, even, I don't even think that played well with, middle of the road people, because everybody saw it for what it was. It was such a just low.
Very transparent.
It was gross.
Well, and from a man who forgot the national anthem just weeks ago. So, I don't know what he has, what he thinks he can say about that.
Yeah.
He didn't mention the Russia investigation.
Oh, really?
He didn't acknowledge Me Too, but he did at one point acknowledge paid family leave.
Yeah.
Well,
that's because Ivanka's working on it.
We're about to tell you more about that. She's not working on it the way you'd hope she was working on it. So that's, and the reason we don't have anything coherent to say is because there was no real content beyond that.
None at all.
So if you were thinking that in all of that time he found a theme and ran with it, what I would raise you is that he found a lot of prop people to point to.
Well, he is, as we have talked about on this podcast many times before, he is sometimes happening on the right sort of end result, but not wanting to get there in the way that you would want him to get there. We've talked about it in regards to trade. He also talked about how he wanted to, I think probably the most response that he got from Democrats was when he said that he had directed his cabinet to look at how they could get drug prices down next year. Now, that he's probably going to do it by giving a bunch of, you know, billions of dollars to the, you know, drug companies. Or God only knows. But you
he'll
know what I mean?
Like,
that's the
it.
Thing with him. It's like you don't get any details. And that's because the details aren't going to be great.
And
like,
also,
you might.
They don't exist yet in his mind.
Right,
so
they,
as soon
right,
as someone
exactly.
suggests a detail to him, he's like, yeah, no,
that sounds
works.
Great. That's
so
solid.
When Marco Rubio comes and says, here's how we pay for paid family leave, he'll just be like,
we just take it from people's retirement funds.
He's then, like, yeah, no, that
yeah, that's
sounds
perfect.
Perfect, yeah. People shouldn't get to have babies and then retire. That's crazy.
That'll teach them.
He said we're in a new American moment, and he's right about that.
Sure, yeah. It's a dark one.
It's new, though.
You know, I got so worked up about that sort of American Carnage speech that he gave a while back. And you know what? Like, I feel like that's a more appropriate speech.
Yeah.
Like, I just, on some level, he should just continue giving that one because, like,
this,
that feels more right to me.
This speech was literally a speech where the phrase beautiful clean coal was uttered. So, I mean, that just should show you how off the rails it was.
I'm pretty sure that he added beautiful. That was one of his additions on the spot.
One of his improv moments.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was interesting to hear him describe the tax cut. Because it was all lies of omission and things like that.
Sure, yeah.
Like, describing how the tax cut was going to benefit everyone, where he doesn't articulate that it only benefits us for a year, and then it starts to really not benefit us.
And that's the thing. And that has always been my concern. And I felt this concern, actually. I was talking to my coworker at work, who is my one Republican coworker. And he you know, made a real big point to point it out to me. And I didn't like it one bit, but I couldn't disagree with him. I had a fuck ton more money in my paycheck last
pay
period. And so, like, you're absolutely right. It's going to run out on us, and it's not going to run out on giant corporations. We've talked about it on this podcast before, but I still have this underlying fear of, like, you know, that here's one thing. Being the year going into an election where everybody's going to be like, look at all this money I have.
Don't panic about it yet, and I'll tell you why.
Okay, great. Good.
Because these tax cuts run out real fast.
They do.
And he has to run again in 2020.
Yes, he does.
So it's one thing for 2018. It's problematic for 2018. Yeah. In 2018, though, we can still kind of remember the fight.
Right, exactly.
In 2020, everyone's taxes are going to be higher, and they're going to be like, what happened here?
Yeah, right, I know, yeah.
And that means that
yeah.
For 1 year, our taxes are going to go down, and then every year, we're going to get less and less money in our paycheck.
Exactly.
So this was their own damage.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't disagree with you at all.
And I'm not as worried as you are. I'm worried about this year. I'm not as worried anymore.
Sure. Well, and that's really sort of all I'm worried about. But it sucks that it's, you know, sucks that it's the election
year.
But
they've already gotten batted down on it, because that's what that Paul Ryan tweet that we're going to talk about in a second is all that.
For sure.
In any case, before we get to that, some fun facts.
Yeah, sure.
Sonny Perdue was the designated survivor.
Oh, yeah, sure. Agriculture secretary.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So he was held in an undisclosed location while the State of the Union went on.
Yep.
Sonny Perdue, like Donald Trump, former Democrat turned Republican.
Wow, fascinating.
Governor of Georgia, formerly. But also, he's our agriculture secretary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He signed one of the harshest immigration laws in the country while he was the governor of Georgia.
That sounds
right. So that's fun.
Yeah, well, he's the perfect designated survivor then, because he could really carry on the legacy of...
In Georgia, the police there, if you are stopped for any reason, just check your papers.
Yeah, sure.
Your employers have to check your papers. Like, everyone has to check your papers in Georgia.
There were a lot of purple ribbons going around. That was for the opioid crisis.
Nancy Pelosi was...
I mean...
Serving face.
I have never loved her... more ever. I mean, maybe I have, because she gets shit done, and I appreciate that about her. But, like, I was living for her face.
Her face.
And her face is usually terrifying, and I'm, you know, I should feel bad about saying that, but, like, I gotta call like it is. She scares me sometimes. Yeah. And I wanted a lock off camera on Nancy Pelosi through that entire speech.
I felt
speech.
Like she should have been allowed to give a response via facial reaction. like in a corner of the screen.
Yeah.
We could just watch her evolving expression.
Yeah, that's right.
Because every time they cut to her, it was amazing.
Yeah, that's right. It was.
The
it was
only topped by the time that Trump tried to claim, Trump said we had the lowest African American unemployment
and
in history, and
they cut to the Congressional Black Caucus,
who was just staring stone faced at him.
Speaking of Congressional Black Caucus, another winner of the night was Brenda Lawrence, who's from Michigan. She's a member of the Congressional Black Caucus. She was caught playing Candy Crush on her phone during the speech.
Well, the Democrats were just, like, not having this, fair, because it was
A lot of them didn't even go. Well, not a lot, but, like, there were a decent amount of people who just, like, were like, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah, yeah. Understandably.
Yeah.
Joe Kennedy Jr., as I've been calling him, gave the official Democratic response in Fall River, Massachusetts.
Yeah, in front of a car with a hood that was propped open. What was
that
staging?
Were they trying to make him
staging?
Look handy?
I don't know.
Because he's a Kennedy. I don't feel like this is not a man who knows how to repair his own car. And I don't think anyone was fooled. He looked just like all the Kennedys. No one was fooled by the car propped up on the stage to think, oh, this must be a Kennedy who's handy. He doesn't look handy, you guys.
No, he doesn't.
He looks like an aristocrat.
He also doesn't look like an adult. Which
another
is a problem that he's having, I think, if he has higher aspirations, which I'm sure he does, because he's a Kennedy.
Exactly.
And that's what they do, is have higher aspirations. But he looks like a small child.
He can't help it. I know. He also, he pulled up Tim Kaine and tried to speak a little Spanish.
That's just what the boring white guys need to
They think that they're,
Spanish.
I know, they think
it's
they're...
not doing what they think that it's doing.
No, I know. It would be, like, if they showed some sort of understanding of issues that young people care about.
And I'm not saying that he doesn't.
No.
And I didn't see his whole response. So maybe it was he might have been saying something very heartfelt about immigration at the time. I'm just saying, like, more broadly.
Yeah,
like,
no, this is
just
not...
giving a speech in Spanish is, like, not, like, that's not
Well, you know who else who could speak Spanish? George Bush.
That's right.
You know? I mean, this not, it's it doesn't paint you as, like, a person reaching out in the way that you would hope it would.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I bet all the Bushes speak Spanish. I mean, Jeb is married to someone who is Mexican. I mean, and George Bush doesn't sound great speaking Spanish, but he tried.
Yeah, that's right.
You know?
Yeah. He doesn't sound great speaking English. Yeah.
He wasn't a well-traveled man, and he still somehow knew some Spanish.
Yeah,
so.
That's right.
But also, the Democratic response was as fractured as the Democratic Party, because Maxine Waters and Bernie Sanders also delivered separate responses to their own wings of the party.
Yeah.
Maxine Waters was on BET, and Bernie Sanders was just delivering to his audience of followers.
Right, probably on the internet. I mean, he had like over 1 million viewers for that Medicare town hall he did a couple weeks ago. Like, I mean, he doesn't need to be on television to get good ratings.
No, exactly. Yeah, Bernie Sanders is somebody who Donald Trump could learn a thing or two about ratings-wise.
That's right.
Yeah. Speaking of, Trump still found a way to lie about the ratings.
Yeah.
Okay, so this was the sixth most watched State of the Union.
That's right.
I would contend that that's a little discouraging only because I was expecting some kind of crazy thing to happen, and I can't believe fewer people, like not that many people seemed interested in finding out what crazy thing it was going to be. That said, Donald Trump's congressional address that he delivered right after he took office
had
higher ratings than this. So I think everyone's just like sick of him.
Yeah.
And I also saw a lot of people who were tweeting things like, you know, at going skiing instead of watching Trump. You know, like everyone was proud that they were not watching. It was, it's like not watching has become a form of self-care.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
So
yeah.
In any case, but he tweeted the next morning, thank you all for the nice compliments and reviews on the State of the Union speech. 45.6 million people watched, the highest number in history. Fox News beat every other network for the first time ever with 11.7 million people tuning in, delivered from the heart.
Mm, the heart.
If only that number was the most people that had ever watched, because then that tweet would be factually correct, except for the delivered by the heart, from the heart part.
Yeah, exactly.
But instead, it was actually, it attracted 2 million fewer viewers than his congressional response.
Yeah.
And like we said, five other State of the Unions have attracted more attention than this one. And I would bet some of them belong to his arch nemesis, Barack Obama.
I would bet, yes.
Because some of them probably belong to people who were good speakers.
Yes, I bet even probably...
I bet Bill Clinton.
Yeah, I bet George Bush.
Yeah, maybe yeah. Too. Yeah, because it's not like this many viewers were watching the speech in 1955 when nobody had a television.
Right, so. Exactly, yeah. Although every television was probably tuned to it at
that
time. But
that's true.
Yeah.
You make a good point.
I don't know.
Who knows? A lot of people watched Watergate hearings.
Right.
A lot of people. If I've learned anything from Slow Burn, which I've learned everything from.
Right.
That's my only source of information for anything from now on. I just listen to Slow Burn.
That's right.
It's explaining everything.
Yeah. Speaking of a Watergate-like scenario, we found a lot of great segues here. And mostly accidentally. We're not going to lie about
three into the podcast, and we're killing it at the segues.
Yeah.
You probably heard about the Nunes memo.
Yeah, this is the best.
Before we go into it, I want to remind everyone that Devin Nunes...
Yeah.
Pronounces his name Nunes, and not Nunez, as you would imagine.
Right.
Because he's trying...
Or Nunes.
Or Nunes.
Even, yeah, even without a tilde in there.
It's Nunes.
He has taken every last bit of Spanish out of
his... Yeah.
That
he's just a guy...
He can think of.
Who's a plural noon. In any case. So, he's the head of the House Intelligence Committee, and one of their...
Which
is questionable because of his lack of basic intelligence. But, one of their charges is to monitor the intelligence service. it's generally one of the more bipartisan.
And the Republicans are taking that really to heart here. And by monitoring, they've been going one step further than monitoring.
They're monitoring
and actually
the
just
monitoring.
Like, they're denigrating.
They're denigrating.
Really.
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. So to distract us from all the real issues, as we, I think, have talked about before on the podcast, Nunes has been undertaking an effort to investigate the investigation into Trump-Russia.
Yes. That's right.
So they're not investigating... No. Whether or not there is validity to the claim that Donald Trump or people in his campaign colluded with Russia.
That's right.
They are investigating the fact that we're investigating.
That's right.
So this week, he was teasing this GOP memo that alleges that the FBI abused its surveillance authority when it sought a FISA court warrant to monitor Carter Page, who's
and
a former Trump
advisor. Who also is one of the bigger idiots out there, by the way.
Huge idiot.
Right.
They've been monitoring him since 2013.
It's worth finding... because it doesn't matter. He never sounds smarter any time than the other. An interview with Carter Page.
Yes.
He's stupid.
I don't know what else to say about him.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's
foreign policy advisor, by the way.
Yeah.
Which is where Trump's getting all his great information from, or was anyway. But
dumb man.
He's an idiot.
In any case, so Carter Page, by the way, just to back up, has been in the FBI crosshairs since about 2013.
Yeah. Well, and therein lies
and
at least one of
the many quandaries.
One of the many quandaries where this whole memo falls apart.
Exactly. Carter Page has been long considered someone who was likely to be a target of Russian.
Right, because we've talked on the podcast about him specifically before and his whole backstory. He'd been to Russia a bunch of times and had like taken a bunch of money from them to like give speeches over there and like sort of was friendly with all of the Russian oligarchs that like live in the U.S. Like, I mean, he basically has sort of fashioned himself as like a knower of all things Russia by doing nefarious things with Russians. Like,
exactly.
We knew that about him already as
dating
people
back
who just
years
knew.
Ago.
Right, yeah.
So, in any case, what this memo Debo claims is that the application to monitor him, which was in October of 2016, was an example of bias against the Trump administration because they one of the reasons the FBI sought this warrant,
right.
And one of the reasons that the FISA court approved it was because of the Steele dossier. Right. And the Steele dossier was commissioned by Fusion GPS, which was indirectly commissioned by the DNC and the Clinton campaign. And so they're claiming that because...
That the DNC basically, like...
This information was obtained, you know, with
money... The DNC
money
bought
from,
this, basically, is sort of ultimately what they're contending here.
Now,
basically.
A lot of the information in the Steele dossier has been independently verified by the FBI. So it's not like they were just using unverified random facts.
Right.
But because of the mention of the Steele dossier... In this FISA court
application. It's not like somebody from the DNC called up the FBI and was like, hey, that Carter Page guy.
No.
Like, that's not what happens.
Exactly. So, in any case, and the FISA process, by the way, would have required that the Steele dossier be verified.
That's the whole...
They're not...
That's what a FISA court does.
Exactly.
By
like,
the
that's
way.
Their whole job. So... Putting all of that aside, and also the fact that this warrant was renewed three times after this time.
Right, with different judges.
With different judges and different information.
Right.
And once again, they've been monitoring this guy since 2013.
Yeah.
This memo argues that this was unfair to Trump and shows that the intelligence services are biased in their investigation of Trump because they're using information that was sort of indirectly linked to the DNC.
Right.
And Trump decided, so, and there is sensitive information in this memo that it was based on them having access to classified information.
Right.
And so the fact that Trump declassified the memo and then approved them releasing it has raised some eyebrows because it's a terrible precedent to set.
Right.
But basically everyone who's anyone who knows anything about the situation has been like, this is out of context.
Right.
It's incomplete. And
basically everyone except for Devin Nunes and the Trump family has read this memo as soon as it came out on Friday and, like, all collectively said, huh?
Yeah. And also, so the Democrats had a response to this memo within the, the intelligence service.
But that wasn't coming out.
Right. Within the Intelligence Committee. And Republicans voted to authorize the release of their memo, which gives the White House 5 days to review, and they approved it. But they voted against releasing the Democratic response. Mm. So the minor amount of context they could have provided here, they chose not to.
That's right.
But, okay, so this is... Sort of, the Democrats are arguing this sets a dangerous precedent for a number of reasons. One of which is that releasing classified information or sensitive information for political gain is just, like, never a good thing to do. And also the fact, you know, that our intelligence services rely on their discretion when they hand this information over.
Yeah.
To not imperil them in any way.
Right.
And so we're less likely to be getting accurate information from our intelligence services if they're like, you guys can't be trusted with this information.
Yeah.
And it also means that foreign bodies that we're working with are going to be less likely to cooperate with the House Intelligence Committee because they're going to be like, well, we can't trust you guys. You guys are fucking assholes.
Right.
So there's that problem.
Yeah.
There's the fact that it sort of doesn't describe the full context of some of the claims it makes.
Yeah.
And one of those is... that the dates it's referring to just, like, don't add up. Because this FISA application was from October 21st. That's 20 days before the election. Any attempt to harm the Trump administration in that close proximity to the election would have been an absurd thing to try.
Right.
Because it wouldn't have worked.
No, they would have not gotten any of the information requested by the FISA court until well after the election would have been decided.
Exactly. Yeah. So this sort of implicit charge that this corrupted the investigation is absurd anyway.
Yeah.
Because at this time, we don't necessarily... Like, by the time that they know anything about this, it's... Or by the time we, the people, know anything about this, it's well after
the election. Right.
But also, they've been investigating Carter Page since 2013. So, like, fucking deal with it. But also, as a separate note... One of the things Trump has been trying to do is take down Rod Rosenstein.
Yes.
The deputy attorney general, because he's the one who went ahead and hired Mueller.
Right. He's overseeing the Mueller investigation.
Because Sessions recused himself.
Yes.
So they're trying desperately to link him to the Steele dossier FISA court application situation. But the problem is he wasn't actually in office yet.
No.
And the memo, I mean, the warrant was renewed like... twice between the time that it was renewed that time and the time that he took office by different judges based on different information.
Yeah.
So their attempt to tie Rod Rosenstein to the situation has also kind of fallen flat. So the overall impression that we've got here is that this is a whole lot of nothing.
It's amateur hour
over
there.
It's amateur hour
over
there, yeah.
Yeah.
So All of that. Right. It really, like, when it was released, the entire day was just like a shitstorm of nonsense. And then by the end of the day, we were all like, well, that was nothing. That was a big, nothing. Fat nothing.
Yeah.
And Trump was like, it vindicated me. And everyone was like, no, no, it didn't. Actually. It had nothing to do with anything.
I mean, even idiot Republicans are out there being like, this is not what you think that it is here. And, you know, he probably had somebody tell him that it vindicated him.
Yeah.
And he is not able to process the information.
Right. He didn't read the memo.
He didn't read the, no. Despite all of his document reading that he claims to be doing on his empty desk.
This memo like, had no pictures in it.
No, exactly. He never read this.
No.
And he wouldn't have been able to comprehend it had he had anyway as a functional illiterate.
Right.
So he doesn't know.
No. So but, he believes it vindicated him because he believes it. And we believe that it didn't.
He also believes that he had the most watched State of the Union address.
Right. It's he's living
and 100 billion people at his inauguration. I mean, this is, we don't have to, it doesn't have to be fact-based.
It sounds nice to be him.
It does.
It sounds like a very comforting world. It's like the time that I read the Fox News homepage. And I was like, in this world, we're taking care of North Korea. Everything's going to be fine.
Yep.
The tax bill doesn't exist. But if it does exist, it's going to do nothing but cut our taxes.
Yeah.
And you know, every general serving in Trump's administration is a hero.
Yeah, that's right.
That was all that I learned from that. And it was very comforting because in the middle of that was on a day where like a lot of shit had fallen apart. And it was like right before the Fire and Fury release. It was like a lot going on that day.
Yeah.
And it didn't mention Fire and Fury once anywhere on the Fox page.
No.
In any case, one person that this managed to really piss off was John McCain.
Oh,
who managed to find a way from his deathbed to release a statement about how pissed off he was.
Yeah.
I'm just going to read part of the statement.
Yeah.
Because it's long-winded, but he says it better than I'm going to rehash it. The latest attacks against the FBI and Department of Justice serve no American interests, no parties, no presidents, only Putin's.
Mm.
The American people deserve to know all the facts surrounding Russia's ongoing efforts to subvert our democracy, which is why Special Counsel Mueller's investigation must proceed unimpeded. Our nation's elected officials, including the president, must stop looking at this investigation through the lens of politics and manufacturing political sideshows. If we continue to undermine our own rule of law, we are doing Putin's job for him. Spoken like a man who remembers Watergate.
Right. And who remembers the USSR.
That's right.
And
still believes it exists.
Exactly.
And he might wait. He might be around long enough to find out it does.
I was going to say,
it's coming back.
I know.
So
pretty soon, you know, when he ran for president, he was, you know, got caught talking about Czechoslovakia.
Exactly.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
You know,
they
could be back at any moment.
No, I feel like if we hang on long enough, John McCain's dystopia will reemerge.
Yeah.
So, at some point, he's going to be back ahead of the curve.
That's right.
This might have been that moment.
Yeah.
And the FBI actually issued a public statement when this was released saying that it had, quote, grave concerns about material omissions of fact that fundamentally impacted memo's accuracy.
Yeah, well, they weren't attempting to put the facts in there.
No, exactly. Yeah, the facts were what they didn't want in there.
Yeah.
What they wanted were the accusations.
That's right.
No facts, though.
Yeah.
In any case, there was a Politico report this week.
Yeah.
That a couple of Russia probe lawyers think that Mueller could indict Trump. Now, most agree that that's not going to happen. That's been a long-standing subject of doubt among the Russia probe lawyer community, if you will.
Yeah.
Because that would cause a constitutional crisis, basically.
Right. That we're going to find out some shit probably went down, for sure.
Right.
Like, that is sort of nobody is, you know, arguing against that. But, like, yeah, you're right. People have sort of been like, is this really going to lead to what so many on the left is really hoping that it's going to lead to.
But so two lawyers, one who represents a senior Trump administration official, told Politico that, and this is not that they know of any specific plans do this, but that they believe that it is possible that Mueller could do this, and that they believe that even if they don't have an airtight case, that he would do it if it showed the grave, you know, if it was necessary to kind of
like
show that there were grave concerns about Trump's involvement and Trump committing obstruction of justice. So,
or even to a degree, like, I can see a world where he, as a member of the FBI, could do it even if, I mean, obviously there has to be a case against Trump.
Right.
But if it's the type of thing where it's the case against Trump that needs to get everyone to be like, maybe let's not have Russia deciding our elections for us.
Right.
Like, even if there's, you know, as Trump likes to say, there was no collusion. But, like, maybe there was enough that was close enough to collusion that whether you knew or not was going on, like, and that Russia chose who won the election.
Well, and
like
maybe that's something the public needs to know.
Right, exactly.
Which is,
and that
he could do this in order to make sure the public is given information that would otherwise not be made public.
Right.
One of them is quoted as saying, if I were a betting man, I'd bet against the president.
Yeesh.
Just not what you want lawyers to be saying about you.
No.
But so in any case, Mueller has been seeking an interview with Trump.
Yeah.
Trump said earlier in the month that he'd do it, and then he backed away. No one thinks he's actually
going to
do it.
First, he said he'd do it under oath, and then his lawyers were like, well, maybe not under oath, and then he has most recently said that he would do it if his lawyers wanted him to do it. So he went from doing it under oath to maybe if my lawyers let me, like, within days, basically. Well, yeah.
Remember when he had three different positions on abortion in 36 hours? Seven,
yeah.
You know, he doesn't. Yeah. No. He doesn't have a consistent plan here.
Yeah.
But so in any case, I feel like the reason that they need to keep him contained is the more erratic he acts, the more likely he acts to end the investigation, the more likely the investigation is going to have to take more extreme measures to get the information out.
Yeah.
And that's when I think this could happen.
Yeah.
Based on my non-legal advice. I mean, I don't fucking know. But if I were Mueller... And I were trying to think of, like, okay, I believe that something of grave danger to the American to American democracy has occurred here, whether or not Donald Trump is the cause.
Right.
And Donald Trump is about to eliminate our ability to get to the bottom of what it was, unless I indict him.
Right.
I fucking indict him.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's trying to destroy Mueller's career anyway. So, like, take him down too.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing that we have said a billion times, and we didn't make it up. I mean, we're just echoing other people. But, like, don't go after the FBI and the CIA and the intelligence community.
Never go after the intelligence community. It is dangerous.
Be doing that.
When you have to do that, you have to be ready to take yourself down in the process.
That's right.
Because and sometimes, you know, they can get out of line too. The left is not famous for our trust in the FBI.
No, they're not. The right is actually. And all of these people that he's trying to take down are fucking Republicans.
Well, that's
right now.
The thing that's so confusing to me. I mean, I have been on multiple trips with Solidarity Brigades to Cuba.
Sure.
And on those trips, all that anyone talks about is who has and has not seen their FBI files. We all believe that we're being followed by the FBI.
Right, uh-huh.
That's a common lefty thing to say.
Yep.
It's common to believe that you have an FBI file. It's common to believe that there's an FBI agent among you, but you're not sure who it is.
Yep.
These are all things the left has been thinking for decades.
Sure.
The right is who trusts in this kind of authority.
That's right.
The FBI is the police of
the
nation.
Well, that's why John McCain is so mad, too.
Yes.
I mean,
they are the nation's police force. If you want to protect the guys in blue instead of the unarmed criminals who are running away from them while they get shot,
that's right.
Then you are in favor of protecting the FBI.
Yeah.
So it is really wild when the left has to step in and be like, listen.
Wait a minute.
Maybe you don't want to fuck with these guys.
Right.
We've been fucking with these guys for decades and it's never gotten us a damn thing.
Yeah.
If you wonder why the left never wins, it's because we fucking mess with intelligence services all the fucking time.
Yeah.
In any case. It's interesting to see how this is... It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, but I am sort of curious at what point Mueller, who is a much smarter man than Donald Trump... Donald Trump has on him his randomness.
He's
not predictable. But I think at some point maybe he is forced to take extreme measures, and that's where a concern like lawyers saying things like, I don't know if I'd bet on the president, is concerning.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on to... We referenced this earlier, Paul Ryan's celebratory tweet about helping a public high school secretary in Lancaster, Pennsylvania make an extra $6 a month has been taken down He tweeted, a secretary at a public high school in Lancaster, Pennsylvania said she was pleasantly surprised her pay went up $1.50 a week. She said that will more than cover her Costco membership for the year.
Yes.
Now, Ryan proudly tweeted this with a link to the article about this secretary without noting that $1.50 a week is $6 a month.
That's right.
$6 a month is less than an hourly wage for an hour.
That's right.
Any hour.
Yep.
And also not a significant raise in any way.
It's not.
And if you are a person who is struggling on less than $75 trillion,
that's right.
You are aware of that.
Yeah.
Is it better to have $6 than not have $6?
That's right.
Sure.
You know what? If somebody's passing out free Costco memberships, you take it.
You take it. Yeah, she's not unhappy that she has an extra $6 a month. Sure.
Of course not.
But is that necessarily a grand victory in a world where the Koch brothers were able to get a tax cut for like $500,000 in the same period? No.
No. It's not.
So, you know.
He was rightly taken to task for this, so much so that he actually took the tweet down, which is like a big yikes, because usually you sort of like think that you're going to have sort of like enough support there, or just like feel like you are going to stand by it to a certain degree, but like that one was so bad it had to come down.
Yeah, and then Nancy Pelosi tweeted, Paul Ryan deleted his embarrassing tweet of a blatant admission because he and the Republicans don't want you to know the truth. The GOP tax scam is a gift to corporate America and the top 1% at your expense. He also doesn't want you to know he got $500 million from the Koch family. No, $500,000 from the Koch family. Sorry, I can't read numbers, it turns out.
Yeah.
Also, this is, we put periods for all of the numbers in here instead of any commas, and that didn't help.
Confusing.
Then John Favreau tweeted from Positive America, as a thank you for passing a $1 trillion corporate tax cut, Paul Ryan received $500,000 in campaign contributions from the Koch brothers, which would probably cover the cost of buying a Costco. Remember, if you don't think benefits like an extra $150 a week and free hostess snacks are good enough, you're the one who's out of touch.
Yeah.
Also, Randy Bryce is now asking people to donate $1.50 to his campaign, which is an amazing...
The Iron Stash.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Turn of events. And he, to help us, quote, repeal and replace Ryan permanently this November.
Yes.
That's a clever campaign. He does clever campaigning.
Good.
He's good at the campaign thing.
Yeah.
But so in any case, maybe your paycheck went up this month.
Yeah.
Mine did. Brent said
his did. Yeah.
I wouldn't say mine went up a fuck ton, as Brent expressed, but it was fine.
It was noticeable.
It was notable. I feel happy about that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to feel happy about it when all of the deductions that I use are gone, and also when all of the things that are providing this tax cut disappear next year.
Hey, that child tax credit doubled.
Thank God.
Yeah.
For all the children that I currently take care of.
Mothering.
Mm. Mothering. and one other sort of slightly unintended tax law fine print effect.
Yeah, those family values,
is
guys.
The family values Republicans are driving people to swifter divorce.
That's right.
Because, so one of the fine print things in the new tax law is that alimony is no longer deductible.
Yeah.
And so a lot of lawyers have been encouraging, especially women who earn significantly less than their husbands, and let's not pretend that there's a big problem of men who earn significantly less than their wives out there, to, if they're thinking of filing for divorce, do it now, because the law changes in 2019.
Yeah.
So you basically have a year to get divorced if you are going to need alimony. And basically, there's like the problem is that it is a much more significant problem that women are making much less than their husbands need the alimony
need the money,
and this makes it harder to negotiate for that money. Whereas there's not a big problem of like men needing tons of alimony from their rich, successful wives.
One is the women who are taking care of the children too, presumably.
Exactly.
So it's, they're, you know, the men go off and then they're by themselves, and the you know, the women are have children to raise.
This is also, it would be great if that wasn't the case,
if
everyone took equal care for, you know, responsibility for all things, and women made equal money to men, but that's not how the world works, so this is going to screw over women like all things. Or
that's
drive
right.
many of them to file for divorce this year.
Yeah.
So, good work, family values, guys.
That's right.
Getting those family values
squared
away.
Yeah.
Well, meanwhile, Trump released his infrastructure plan this week, and
it makes perfect sense in that it fits into the GOP economic narrative of magical voodoo thinking.
Yeah,
it's voodoo economics.
Yeah,
is what this is. I mean, it literally makes no sense.
And
using that word correctly. It just doesn't actually make sense.
It fits into Trump's strategy of giving out half-assed directives to Congress and then telling them to figure it out themselves.
That's right.
So the plan is a broad outline that includes no details.
He loves a good broad outline.
Well, he only thinks in broad outlines.
Yeah.
And includes $200 billion.
He drew him a photo of a bridge.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It includes $200 billion in federal money over the next decade. But they believe somehow that's going to magically spur an additional $1.3 trillion in spending from city, states, and private companies on major infrastructure projects.
They're going to put out $1 and then expect these places are going
to
spend $6.50 because they got a dollar from the federal government?
Yeah, you
is
know
that right?
works.
Yeah, oh.
Yeah, so
no
one's
don't explain it to
sure
me.
What leverage they're planning to use to extract this money from these places.
Huh.
I'm not sure which cities and states and private entities, whatever that means, are going to be lining up for the chance to pay personally for their major infrastructure projects.
Well, all the states are already in debt. So they can't be spending $6.50 on every dollar they get from the federal government because that's not their life.
Right. And the only states that aren't in debt are probably A, either handling their infrastructure, or B, if it's federal infrastructure projects, probably not trying to fucking pay for the federal government to repair federal roads in their state.
Right, exactly.
Because they don't want to be in debt.
Uh-huh.
You either are in debt or you don't want to be in debt. Those are the only two things that happen in a state. There's no states that aren't in debt but want to be. So this is just not a realistic way of thinking about spending.
God, that was some serious logic right there.
Thanks. Yeah, I took logic when I was in high school. So Democrats are obviously like, hey, how about you put some more federal money into this? The Trump administration would not specifically or would not specify
how they're going to pay for that.
How they're going to pay for that or any other money. Right. They said there would be unspecified cuts, but they're going to let Congress work that out.
Yep.
And they are open to any bipartisan proposal that meets his criteria of somehow generating $1.5 trillion in infrastructure spending. But also that speeds the process of permitting and makes investments in rural communities. Now, the speed the process of permitting thing is code. That's about not having to go through environmental reviews for infrastructure spending projects.
And he talked about this in the State of the Union speech.
He talked about it in the State of the Union speech, but this is the thing he's trying not to tell you about that talking point.
Yeah.
That talking point is about getting around environmental regulation.
Yep.
It's an indirect anti-environment law.
That's right.
So that change is, if you start to see negotiations about this break out along the lines of people being like, that is an unacceptable thing, and it's not, you're like, why would these people not want to speed up infrastructure? That's why. But also, I'm also curious to see what kind of bipartisan proposal that somehow raises $1.5 trillion without it costing the government any money is going to be. That sounds like a magic.
If they can figure that out, they really can do anything.
Then I don't think that we should have to address the fact that our debt ceiling is going to have to be increased a month sooner than we think because of the tax bill.
I mean, once we're just pulling $1.5 trillion out of the
thin air,
then
let's stop paying taxes entirely.
I mean,
we don't need that money.
Yeah. I mean, you and I have often contended that we might just be able to be doing that anyway, since there's really no reason that
there's no reason that California
works like it does anyway
needs it.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The economy doesn't exist.
Right.
By the way, we've made up the economy.
Like, let's just make $1.5 trillion more dollars.
Yeah, exactly. That's how money works.
Like, right. If I realize that's not exactly how it works, but like on some level, like
we made up
it
the
also
money.
Sort of is.
Right. The rules, we made up the rules.
That's right.
I was reading.
Maybe that's his plan.
I'm reading a Sarah Vowell book, the Wordy Patriots, not the one about the Puritans.
Oh yeah,
that I'm
right.
forgetting
the
name of right now.
Yeah.
But one of the things she talks about is how we always attribute our legacy to the Puritans as if we were all a bunch of like non-dancing, like, you know, super Christians. And that, and one of the reasons we tolerate this like crazy Christianity, this crazy strain of Christianity in this country, is because we consider our, this connection back to these like lunatics that came over here in the 1600s. But in fact, the American ethos is really much more the ethos of New Amsterdam. It is the ethos of unbridled capitalism.
Money. Yeah,
and just like, it's the ethos of like, do whatever you need to do to make a buck.
Yeah.
And that ethos did not come from
the
Boston or from the Puritans.
Yeah.
That came directly from the Dutch.
No, the Puritans weren't worried about that.
No, exactly. They Well, and also the Puritans were actually like fairly well read. Like they sat around writing books and scholarly bullshit.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was bullshit because it was based on the Bible or whatever. But like, you know, it was like, they were like very studious people. They like, you know, like the early settlers of Boston like immediately set up Harvard. Like, instincts after they arrived so that they could train their clergy to be, you know, fluent in Greek or whatever. So, in any case, I was thinking about that before as I was thinking about how the economy is a fake thing, which is not, it's not even, it's a fake thing and also the Dutch made it up.
Come on.
As English as we think it is. It was just, we just went, fell into a Dutch K-hole and here we are. In any case, this infrastructure plan is a total scam and I think we know it.
Yeah.
As with any Trump plan, he said he wants to invest in infrastructure, a goal we can all agree on. But he, mark my words, he will not agree to any plan that actually invests in infrastructure.
No.
The plan will be to make other people invest in infrastructure. But if he himself is called upon to approve investing in infrastructure without maybe like cutting out, like if you want, if we in exchange for that, like let him take away Social Security entirely, then maybe he'll do it. But like he's not going to. And we need the infrastructure spending because we had two train crashes this week.
Yeah.
One on a train that was a charter train carrying the entire or like half of the GOP caucus to their retreat.
And now that was because there was a garbage truck on the train track. So I'm sure they're not going to be able to relate that to infrastructure, even though better infrastructure, I would assume, would probably be able to keep a garbage truck off of a train track.
And potentially also alert the train that there was something
That's right.
in the tracks.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, I love the story for this is not funny. It's sad because somebody died in the truck, right. And there were people injured. Yeah. But there were all these doctors in Congress. For some reason, a lot of GOP Congress people are doctors, right? Which is funny because they don't seem to understand basic things about health insurance, right, and access to care. But right, whatever.
Or science.
Yeah. But so like a whole bunch of them went like running out the back of the train to try to like save people.
Right.
They had my favorite part of the description is that one of the Congress people who's an Indiana rep, Larry Bushkans, or Bouchons, I don't know how to say his names. His wife, Catherine, was there as well, and she's an anesthesiologist.
Oh.
So she tried unsuccessfully to intubate one of the victims on the site.
Yikes.
Which I was like, what a horrible detail to add to that story. But so apparently a whole bunch of them, like, you know, Bill Cassidy and Jeff Flake, and then a bunch of doctors who were in the house, just like raced through the train looking to save people and stuff. I mean, I guess if you had to be in a train crash, the GOP caucus wouldn't be the worst people to be.
No, I guess not.
If you had to fund a train that wasn't going to crash,
that's right,
they might be terrible people to be.
You'd want the Democrats to be on.
You'd want the Democrats to be on that train. But if you're in some sort of emergency scenario, I feel like the Democrats would be useless in terms of saving lives on the scene that way.
Sure.
Unless Cory Booker was there. I would trust Cory Booker to personally carry everyone to safety.
That's right.
So
that's true.
He's saved his share of old ladies and cats in his time.
He has. Yeah.
But there was also a crash today in South Carolina that two people died and like 100 people got injured,
right,
when an Amtrak train that was traveling from New York to Miami collided with a parked freight train. And it turned out the Amtrak train had been on the wrong track.
I mean,
Amtrak, it's so sad because I love the train.
Yeah, you want to be able to take the train.
I want to be able to take the train because I find the train
very enjoyable.
You want
it to be able
enjoyable.
To go faster.
Mm-hmm.
You want it to be able to allow you to not be dying.
Correct.
And well, that's really it.
Those
are the two things that you would like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I would like to be able to take the train and not think, what if we crashed?
That's right. Yeah.
And there are just too many train crashes going on. Yeah. I mean, would I still take the train? Of course.
The train is just going too damn slow.
Yes.
Way too slow.
And in California, we don't have functional trains when you... Like, we do for sort of like micro trips.
Sure.
Like, you can get from Santa Barbara to San Diego on the train.
Right.
But you can't get to San Francisco.
You can't.
It takes 12 hours by train.
I was going to say, I took it up there once. And
yeah,
you can't get all the way there. You can only get to San Jose unless they've completed more
traffic. Well, and I think you have to... You basically go up to Sacramento and take a left. Like, you have to travel through every podunk town in California. Yeah. And there's no... You can more easily take a Greyhound bus.
It
takes half the time to take a Greyhound bus.
That's
think about that.
Upsetting.
Think about that. Greyhound buses take half the time.
Stop telling me things.
I actually took a Greyhound bus once and I found it really pleasant. I like the bus. I don't know. Huh. I was on a New York City street the other day, like a few weeks ago, and I shouted something like, I don't know why everyone thinks they're too good for the bus, as I was screaming about how people were telling me they wouldn't take the bus like from D.C. or Boston or whatever. And the woman behind me just turned around and was like, yeah. And then just like kept walking.
New York,
man. I was like, oh, I miss you guys. So in any case, back to the paid family leave situation, which we referenced earlier.
Yeah.
Ivanka Trump is working with Marco Rubio on this, so you know it's going to be a killer plan.
This one, in terms of, like, the math, actually works. It's terrible.
Right. It doesn't work in terms of the morals.
Right, exactly. It's not the math you want.
Right.
But it makes sense in terms of, like, oh, well, I can see how you get there.
Yeah.
There.
So a thing that the GOP has been hatching of late is a plan for paid family leave that would require parents to use their Social Security money for maternity leave and then put off retirement when it's time to retire.
Right.
So basically you'd borrow against your future retirement.
Yeah, so you want to take 6 weeks off, then you get to retire 6 weeks after whatever it is that you're supposed to be eligible for your Social Security.
Yeah.
So you just basically are punished by working longer for having a child.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Women's empowerment.
Yeah.
Go America.
Uh-huh. Ivanka for president.
Yeah. So in any case, Ivanka Trump has long talked about wanting to work on paid family leave.
That's right.
And because of that, I had assumed that she, as a working mother, understood
new things,
the basics of anything.
She doesn't.
But she doesn't, unfortunately, and I wouldn't trust Marco Rubio, as far as I could throw him, to care about any of this.
No.
So they don't have a plan yet. This is just like the only thing we know so far about their plan.
This is
their starting point for the plan.
Yeah.
But it's something to keep our eye on as a plan develops, because we want to make sure that people know that this is an unacceptable thing.
Yeah.
You don't punish people for having children while you're trying to pretend that you're not punishing people for having children.
That's right.
And then you don't Also, like, punishing parents by staving off their retirement just for the choice to have kids is not the family values that they claim to purport.
No.
But they, of course, believe that mothers should stay home, so they don't think you should need paid family leave. The White House also backed away from a pick for the Council on Environmental Quality recently because she was that bad. Kathleen Hartnett White had been appointed by Trump to join the council. She's a former Texas regulator. She managed to get through confirmation hearings despite crazy sounding views on everything and also like missing basic facts of science.
Right. Like, and she was also like in a deal to close the session, like at the end of December, the Democrats sent her nomination back to the White House.
Yeah.
And then Trump just renominated her last month.
It's
because they were like, no, this is not happening. Dude. And then he just nominated
her again. And now he's taking her back.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's some highlights about her, just in case you were wondering what quality of person, because this story was small when it first happened, but you should know what quality of people we're talking about. She has literally said in 2011 at an event called the EPA's Job-Crushing Regulatory Assault, what you never hear, and regrettably not even from our side, is there is no environmental crisis.
Oh.
She dinged her own party for not being harsh enough on not thinking there's a crisis.
Which is exactly what they all think. So I don't know even what she was talking about anyway.
She's said that people don't die from particulate matter levels. Now, if you're not a scientist, maybe you're not familiar with that term.
Yeah.
I am because of my work with Stye Health, and we talk a lot about particulate matter levels. There's a lot of weird science terms I had to learn for that job that I don't want to know, but I do. The World Health Organization says about 3 million people a year die from particulate matter levels. That's stuff that's in the air.
That's 3 million more than zero.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And particulate matter levels are just things in the air. Like, it's essentially a kind of pollution. You know, like, but so claiming that no one dies from pollution in the air is a suspicious thing to claim when people have definitively 3 million, in fact, a year died of such things. She said that coal was the reason we were able to abolish slavery.
Oh, well.
Fossil fuels dissolved the economic justification for slavery. You know how the direct cause and effect of us building a coal economy and not needing slaves anymore worked. Very clear.
No, I don't. I would like her to attempt to teach it to me, though.
Oh, my dog is getting excited about this. Uh-huh. And she's also attacked the EPA's rules to limit mercury pollution from coal-fired power plants. That's something that a few Republicans actually work on personally. Like, I know Susan Collins is active on that. So there's a few Republicans that care deeply about that micro issue there. And so that's even a weird thing to say just on general principle. But so...
Also, like, that's the thing that allows you to go around and talk about clean coal.
Exactly.
Because there isn't actually clean coal.
No, but there's coal with less mercury pollution.
Right, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, beautiful clean coal can only exist if we address the fact that there is such a thing as dirty coal.
That's right.
And the dirtiness we're talking about is not the coal, it's the mercury.
Right.
In any case, and the Democrats are having an interesting scenario over on their side of the world as well.
Because we talked last week about how the Democrats were working to sort of, like, take down any sort of progressive challengers. And I'm not necessarily saying that this challenger is, like, a super crazy progressive.
No.
But I was heartened this week by the fact that some of these groups seem to be lining up behind a challenger to Dan Lipinski, who is a Democrat from Illinois, who is garbage. He's a garbage person.
He doesn't support a $15 an hour minimum wage. So the SEIU is pissed at him.
Yep.
He's
pro-life. And they endorsed his...
There's a whole bunch of groups. We'll read you the groups that endorsed his opponent.
Yep.
He's pro-life, so a lot of women's health groups like Emily's List and NARAL don't like him. He's against the DREAM Act, which is like why even be against the DREAM Act?
Right?
Well, like, most Republicans aren't even against the DREAM Act. Like, don't be a maniac.
Huh? Yeah, like, it doesn't even make any
sense. I don't even know, like, why you would formulate a plan to be against the DREAM Act.
Yeah.
It's like... supported by 90% of the country. Just, like, pull your life together.
Yeah.
But so there's a primary on March 20th, and he's been in office since about 2005.
Yep.
He took the seat from his father, who was also, who was named William Lipinski, who had it for 22 years. So they've had, for, like, the last, like, 35, 40 years, a lock on this seat.
Yeah.
But there's this woman, Marie Newman, who's just a businesswoman from Illinois, who is now running for the seat and has somehow secured endorsements from SEIU, Emily's List, NARAL, MoveOn.org, Democracy for America, PCCC, which is the Progressive Campaign Courage Change Committee, I can never remember, and HRC.
Yeah.
So That's a pretty wild list for a challenger to a sitting Democrat.
Yeah, who's been there for
the only
over a decade.
Major group that is endorsing him is the AFL-CIO so far, which is weird. I'm kind of like,
right?
Don't
like,
be doing
I don't understand why they're.
Because he's not supporting a $15 hour minimum wage. I don't understand why.
I know, which is why. And SEIU has already jumped ship.
But
so
SEIU
like, why can't they?
Is more radical
I know.
Than.
Yeah, I know.
I love SEIU.
Yeah.
They're at the front of
but
every
But I just
protest.
Feel like it seems like the dominoes are falling. So, like, why not just, like, just. I feel like they could just. They could really just ultimately assume that this guy doesn't exist if they wanted to. Do you know what I mean?
I know.
Like, just pretend that she's the incumbent at this point. I realize she still has to win a primary, but like once you have basically every major, national group behind a candidate, like fuck Dan Lipinski.
Exactly.
Who the hell is he? Like, don't be the AFL-CIO holding out for Dan Lipinski. Like, that's not a good look.
No, exactly. Well, and I think also at this point, even if he wins, he is going to have to think about his life a little, which is one of the reasons you do this.
Yeah.
So even if he does win,
right, exactly.
He is forced to think, it is probably not a good look. You know, he has $1.6 million in the bank. She only has $236,000.
Right. There's like, Gillibrand is coming in this week.
They're
so
bringing
in
big guns to go support her. Yeah, Gillibrand is coming in this week. And also, once you have all of the future fundraising tied to... you know, another candidate.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the reason he has that much money in the bank is because he's probably been sitting running unopposed or running barely opposed for a decade now.
Yeah.
So once you have all of the groups that provide the big money in these event in these smaller races coming for you, it's not long before she has that much money in the bank too,
no,
or a challenger
not.
Figures out a way to have enough money to beat you. So
totally. You
have to think about your life a little.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, two of his colleagues from the Chicago area have endorsed her. So two other sitting congresspeople who serve with him in the Illinois caucus have endorsed this other candidate, Newman.
And these are big names, too. Like Jan Schakowsky. Like, she's a person that I've...
Right, she's like a person I've
heard of. Yeah.
Luis Gutierrez...
Yeah, who knows?
But never heard of, but can't say he's not important.
No, exactly.
But so, what a year.
I know. Hey, you know, Michelle Bachmann, she was looking for that sign from God. She got it. Probably not the one she was... specifically looking for.
No.
Because.
But she got a sign and it was from God.
From God. Exactly. Yes. Because she told last year, as we have told you before, Jim Baker, that she was looking for a sign from God about whether she was going to run for Al Franken Senate seat.
Right.
So she said that she trusts in a, quote, big God. Mm-hmm. And that she was and that's who told her to run for president.
Right.
Mr. Big God.
Yeah. Big God in 2012.
Yeah. Uh-huh. She also called that run wildly successful.
Yeah. Questionable what her definition of that would be.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Anyway, so she said, so the question is, am I being called to do this now? I don't know. Well, some genius in St. Paul put up a billboard and it said, Michelle Bachmann, no.
And then
signed
God. It was paid for by either God. Or crowdfunding from the goodlordabove.com, which is a satirical website.
Yeah.
Either one. You believe what you believe. You know?
Yeah.
I'm not here to doubt your beliefs.
No. Mm-mm.
I'm choosing to believe God put that billboard up there.
Yeah. But I hope God tells her to run, though.
I know. I know. I'm torn about this because she's obviously the root of all evil. So, like, I don't want her be a senator.
No.
But I miss her.
Same.
She's one of the more fascinating people out there.
That's
and
right.
There's nothing I want more than to spend more time hearing about her.
That's right.
So, it's been a tough.
Yeah.
It's been tough for me to think about what I want here.
Yeah. The... GOP retirements from Congress just keep on coming.
Trump is tiring them out.
He really is.
I mean, God.
And Trey Gowdy just can't take it any longer.
Yeah. Well,
which
he looks like he was dying. He looks sickly all the time.
Yeah,
so
he does. Yeah, he looks like Voldemort, I think.
Yeah, he does look a lot like Voldemort.
But anyway, he announced earlier in the week that he was retiring, and then this weekend explained why exactly he was retiring. And I sort of has some self-awareness here, although then he said something later that made me think maybe he didn't. But he said, my wife hates it when I say this, but I was a pretty good prosecutor, I think. But I've been a pretty lousy politician, which is so right. But then he also went on to say that the reason that he considers himself a lousy politician is because he can see, quote, multiple sides of a single issue, which we all know for certain that he cannot.
Yeah.
So I think he's maybe confused about what it is that's happening in his own
brain.
You
remember him for getting his ass handed to him by Hillary Clinton during a sham of a hearing.
Right,
that
on
he
Benghazi.
Was,
he ran the Benghazi
House,
here. And that is what he will ultimately be remembered for.
If
I were him, I would have stayed in a little bit while longer just to see if I could maybe attach my name to something.
Right, to like my
literally
hair
anything
catching
else.
Fire or something.
Right?
Yeah.
Know, exactly, yeah. Because, he was, will forever be known as that.
I mean, he has been against the Nunes memo.
That's true. Yes. Yeah, so but that's he's not going to be remembered for that.
He's not going to be remembered for that when he...
But that's heartening, I guess.
Yeah. But so, in final news...
Yeah.
This is just a quick reminder from us that nature is terrifying.
We like
and hunting
to remind you of this
makes it more terrifying.
Every once in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we've told you about frozen iguanas and
falling out of the sky, tree snakes.
Mice falling from the sky, being dropped to feed the tree snakes. We love sinkholes on this podcast.
Just a mysterious field of dead birds.
Yes.
Remember that one?
Oh, God, I do. Yes.
Yeah.
But this time.
This was human error.
Error. It wasn't human error because this guy is apparently a good shot.
Well, but it wasn't his human error. His friends.
It was his friends. Yeah, exactly.
This guy in Maryland wound up in the hospital on Thursday because his friend, he was with a group of, I think, two or three friends out hunting, and one of his friends shot a Canada goose and it fell out of the sky and landed on his head.
Yes.
He got knocked unconscious and lost two teeth in the hit because apparently they weigh like 10 to 14 pounds.
Yeah, think of it as like a
bird. It's a whole bird.
Yeah, it's like a bird that
like
you could
a turkey.
Feed a turkey. Yeah, I was going to say you could feed your family with it on Christmas.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Canada
goose. Christmas goose.
Yeah. Yeah, it fell right out of the sky. Hit him on. It's like a turkey falling out of the sky and hitting you on the head.
Yikes.
It's apparently also, the article points out that it's reminiscent of an accident that happened back in 2016 when an elk hunter shot and killed a bull elk in Oregon, then used his four-wheeler to try and drag the elk's body up a hill, but the vehicle flipped over, and he rolled backwards and impaled himself on the elk's antlers.
Not funny, but also...
Hunting is scary, you guys.
It's hilarious.
If you don't get shot by your friend by accident, Dick Cheney, you could get hit in the head with a bird.
With a goose.
Or impaled on an elk horn.
No.
There's nothing good about that.
No.
I would stay out of nature entirely if I were you.
Yeah, and you know what? Stay away from guns, guys.
Seriously. The best way to avoid getting shot in the face
because
or
we are,
hit in the head.
We are against
guns
for any use
any
in case
use
you are just joining this podcast.
Right. Any use at all. We are in favor of government goons coming into your house, stealing all your guns.
Right. And we could have brought that up again this week. We just did bring it up. Right. But there was a school shooting this week, by the way, too, which we did not pull information on. But it's like, what are we going
to
do? Talk about school
shootings. Yeah, there was one here this week.
Yeah, it was in California.
Yeah. It was in L.A.
Middle school, for God's sake.
Yeah, a 12-year-old, I think.
Yeah.
But there was one last week. I mean, there's one every week.
Yeah, of course.
Let's remember that.
But guns.
Guns. Get them out of your house.
That's right.
Don't even shoot animals with them. That's not a good sport.
No.
If you want to go for an exciting hunting sport outing.
Yeah, play laser tag or something.
Play laser tag. Or like, at its most deadly, take a bow and arrow with you.
No, sure.
Fewer people die in bow and arrow attacks than other weapons.
Yeah,
and I think that's because bows and arrows are unwieldy and difficult to use. But that's what makes it a sport.
That's right.
If you can just kill the animal just because it's coming at you, that doesn't help anyone.
No.
So
it helps you because it's coming at you.
That's true.
But you
stay out of its path,
I was
going
to say. Yeah, you laid your bed.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the news this week. We will be back next week with more fallout from the Nunes memo. I don't know. I don't even know what I'm expecting to happen next week.
I don't either.
But I'm sure something will. We'll talk to you then.
Bye.
Bye.